हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 1, the fullness of Brahman. So this is establishing the point that Brahman has to mean Bhagavan is superior because we have the element that we established that bhakti is the highest and Brahman realization is a step towards Bhagavan realization or towards bhakti. In other words, Brahman, the principle of Brahman just means you're situated on the spiritual platform. You're liberated from material consciousness like that, from that position, that material position. So for the devotees, that's just something that they do. They give up material consciousness and they establish themselves in the spiritual consciousness. And so that situates them on the spiritual platform. So liberation is just an automatic thing. It's just like to cook, you go into the kitchen, right? So let us say somebody's very hungry, right? And all the difficulties in the material, you know, in the rest of the house are bothering them because no matter what they, you know, put in their mouth, it's not satisfying. The pillows aren't satisfying, the house slippers aren't satisfying, you know, the dust mop is not satisfying, you know, the hamster is not satisfying. All these things are not satisfying. So then they want to get out of the rest of the house into the kitchen where it doesn't have any of those things, because there's just all metal and stuff, and you know that you can't eat that anyway. And so by being in the kitchen, then their idea is, now I will not be bothered by all the anxiety of all these things to try to enjoy to eat that are not edible. Right? You'd say, this is foolish. You go into the kitchen to cook. You don't go into the kitchen just to stand there and, oh, I'm not in the rest of the house, so this is so nice. So that's the position of liberation. For those who are uninformed, they think it's the ultimate goal. For those who are informed, it's just the position in which you perform devotional service from. It's just like you go into the kitchen to cook. It's kind of like, you know, of course. So Brahman is the platform of Brahman, the Brahma Bhuta, is just the position in which the devotee performs service from. It's a position. Within that position, then he performs the activities, and then he does all that to please Krishna. Because the spiritual world is the liberated platform, you know, but because they can't tolerate variety and the whole spiritual world, including Brahma, that's all spiritual, but they don't understand about forms, so they want that spiritual platform without forms, you know, so then it's even, you have a kitchen that has nothing in it, you know, and that's why it's good, because there's nothing to chew on, right? So that's the difficulty, is they're very uninformed. And that's because they don't want to be informed, because there is still the idea I'm going to be the controller and enjoyer still remains. They're not giving that up. So that means they're not actually situated on the spiritual platform. They go up, they get a taste of it, but that's the whole point. They can't move forward from that position. So because of that, then they suffer. Though they think, oh no, this is so fabulous. But if it's so fabulous, why do they come back? So for the devotee, the spiritual world is the spiritual situation. It is the liberated position. But that liberated position is full of individuals in their natural forms that fit their relationships with the Lord. And so then in a relationship, you can see is that when there's inspiration in a relationship, you want to do something, right? And so then that is then the anubhavs, what they want to do, and then there's the concomitant ecstasies from doing things in relationship to Krishna, right? So that's just natural. You would naturally do things. There'd be no such thing as doing nothing. The idea of doing nothing comes from that the work that we do is not inspiring, or the work that we do is, the intensity of it and all that. So then you just want a break where you do nothing. But the actual position is if you're doing something you like, you don't need a break from doing something. There might be the variety of doing something else, but you don't have the aspect that you have to give up doing something, right? Because even if you go on vacation, which means you give up work, do people just sit in the room all day? No, you might sit there first after a long traveling, then you might there and sleep in and get up late and all this. But by the afternoon, then you want to go to the pool, you want to go to the beach, you want to go out shopping, you want to do something. You're not going to just lay in bed all day, say 5 days vacation, so you just slept for 5 days. Not going to happen, right? Unless of course you're Rip Van Winkle, but you see after 20 years, he did get up and want to do something. But other than him, then no. Muchukunda also, when he woke up, he burned Kaliyavana into ashes. So you do something. You can only not do something for so long. So the whole point is that it's natural to be active. It's natural to engage the senses, but in context of Krishna. Because it's like the hand. It's part of Krishna. It's part of our body. So it's naturally engaged doing something for the body. So the same way, since we're part and parcel of Krishna, then we're naturally going to do things in connection with Krishna. It's not some separate thing and, being exploited and this and that. No, if we don't have the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, these foolish ideas won't come up. But because we have the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's where the problem comes. That makes sense. So this liberated platform is just a natural step. It means you're giving up the material, but you haven't necessarily developed that love for Krishna. And so because of that, then being way in the broad range, then you, like it says, the four Kumaras, they were devotees. Like the Lord is going out to see his devotees. But we also see is that point when they went from the Brahman realization to Bhagavan, then was when the Lord came out and they smelled the tulsi and everything coming from his feet. So in the broader range, if someone's, accepts that they're supreme and is following the Vedic rules and all those and that, then in one sense, they're devotees. It's just, but they're only devotees on the platform of Brahman, right? We're not talking Mayavadis, they're just offensive, right? Then those who worship the yogis working in Paramatma, then it's there, then they move on. But it's the ultimate goal that then when you see, because you can say as they're devotees and that they're dealing with the Supreme, but you don't really call them devotees until that faith, that surrender. That's when you say. Otherwise, they're devotees, but they're Samanya Bhaktas. Like so many individuals you see is that if you bring up Krishna, they have that kind of mood. They're happy to go to the temple and worship, and that is Janmashtami or some, Govardhan Puja, something connected to Krishna. They'll do in like this, but their ultimate, they don't really, that's not the mood. So therefore they're not really counted as your sampradayic devotees. But Samanya, yes, even those who are monotheistic and accept this one supreme Lord, then that's you can say that's Vaishnav, but it's very general. So they're not even following the Vedic traditions. They're not following all these different things. It's not as scientific. It's very basic. And so then there is the idea that what their work and somehow or another should be connected to the Lord. So you have that. So you have that general thing. So we see is that when we're talking broadly, then in Samanya, so many can be included. Anybody who has that kind of monotheistic understanding, then is counted within the Vaishnav, you know, how you say, the broader, the fold, you know. But of those who are serious, the Sampradayak, then those are the ones that have come to the platform of faith that bhakti is the thing that's going to be, it includes all other activities. Then they're going to be developing that faith until it comes to prema. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like Srila Prabhupada, when he's talking about, you know, that the superiority of the Vedic culture and literatures. So in that, you know, as opposed to those who don't, then he counts everybody who accepts that literature, and you see that they are successful. So in that, you know, group, then you say Vivekananda, Mahatma Gandhi, you know, all these guys, they're all included. And you see how influential and everything they are and all that. But then when he goes back from that, then he'll talk about those who are, you know, seriously follow the Shastras and all that, who are Sampradayak. Then that will bring that'll drop them off. Right? In other words, they've dropped out anything that's not following the Vedas. Then they follow those who are following the Vedas, but not actually according to Sampradaya. So that will drop them all off. You know, Mahatma Gandhi and Vivekananda. But it will leave Shankara. Then he'll get more of the Vaishnav, then they'll drop off Shankara. Does that make sense? So you see, as you have this wide range. So yes, it can accommodate, but at the same time, you can still tell the distinction. You can still tell. So yes, they're there, and so that's there, but it doesn't mean that what you're, the example you're taking is following the Vedic literatures, right? But it's not that you're following their instructions or their idea, because that's speculative. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so the whole point is the Brahman platform is just the platform that devotees work from. The spiritual platform is just the natural platform. So it's no big deal. For devotees, it's automatic. If you're absorbed in Krishna, because Krishna is spirit, you're automatically on that platform. Now it's a matter of, do you have that devotion? Do you have that you know, developing that prema? That's then moves forward. But that's just every devotee is situated there. Yes.
Sometimes devotees ask, they don't understand this position of liberation for the devotees. Not the meaning of merging into Brahmaji, but they say that if we are on the liberated position, it should be constant.
Yes, it should be constant. So that's the question. Why isn't it constant? That's the question you ask them. So if someone else is supposed to do it for you, I mean, it's just like this. Let us say there is a group of people there. You know, you have some friends and all that. Someone brings some prasad. And so then let's say you eat the prasad on behalf of everybody else. Right? And so that's a good thing, right? No one else has to bother eating. You just eat and for everybody else. Does that work? I mean, it works for you, but now you're saying, does it work for anybody else? Or do they, if they want to get the benefit, they have to eat? So the whole point is yes, the Brahman platform should be stable. So why isn't it? Whose fault is that? You know, you want it, you get it. You know, it's like you're driving your car and it runs out of petrol. Well, the cars are supposed to have, cars need petrol to run, you know, so there should always be petrol. Whose fault is that? So it has to be understood is that it's looking at it, oh, why isn't it like, then do it. Give up the material desire, focus on Krishna. Because all you have to do is connect it to Krishna. It's just like, your work, it means you have to maintain, means you want to do devotional service. You want, and the whole idea of family life is to engage your family in devotional service. So therefore, you want to create facility in which you and your family can be engaged in devotional service, right? So now for that, then there that you need facility, and that facility requires you know, finances, you know, some variety of some economic kind of position. So now, how do you get that? By making an endeavor in that way, you know, either as endeavoring to do brahminical activities, people reciprocate, or by begging, you know, or you're doing your administrative work and through the taxes and other things, you know, the governmental system, you get taken care of, or you're running your business, and so therefore you make your money, or you work for someone else who's making money and assist them, and so then they pay you something. Right? But why are you doing that? Just so you can maintain the family in Krishna consciousness. It's not a separate endeavor. You know, it's just like, are you eating when you go to the market? I mean, you're not supposed to be, but I say, no, it's not a meal. You're just buying stuff. What about driving it home in the car? You know? What about, you know, taking it out and putting things in the fridge and in the pantry and on the shelf and, you know, all these different things? Is that eating? What about getting out the vegetables and washing them? No. What about cutting them? No. Peeling them? No. Putting them in the pot and pushing them around? No. Right? So the whole point is that eating starts when you offer it to Krishna. You know, and then you take the remnants. So all that before was preliminaries because this needs to be done. So since you and the family want to do devotional service, you have to have some shelter, some food, some clothes, some medicine, and that takes money. Therefore, there's a job, but it's not about the job. That's the whole point. Varna just holds the society together so that people can perform ashram. It's not equal, because you see is that, you know, the great...
Thank you so much.
Did he come back yet? Okay, we're back. Yeah, current went off.
Okay.
Seems to just be, this is the time of day that it goes on and off. Maybe mm-hmm. It's just whenever you had a Zoom program, then they turn off the current?
Maybe.
Yeah. Just like yesterday, it didn't do that. Okay, so all these other things, they're preliminaries that by that, then you eat. So you can't, right? You can't say that, can you hear? Yes?
Yes, Marge.
Yeah, okay. You can't say that going to the market and buying things is against eating or unnecessary. Oh, we just eat. We don't bother with all these rules and regulations and all these things like that. We're transcendental. We're spontaneous. We just eat. It's kind of like, okay, great. You know, but you generally see anybody who knows the process knows that going to the market and preparing things and planning things, that's all part of the eating process. That's how it works, right? So the same way is that but it's not the main thing. The main thing is the cooking and eating. So therefore you're going to perform devotional service to please Krishna, and then to maintain that environment, that's why there's work. You know, and then you have the facility, you have to maintain it. Therefore you clean the house and tidy it up and, you know, improve things and adjust things around and move the sofa around and all the things like that, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that these are just part of that. That's why it's said devotional service includes everything, because if you want to perform the service, then you need the facilities. You know, just like if we say cooking means that we're working within food, cooking includes everything. Cooking includes going to the market. Right, cooking includes going to the market, making the plan for the menu, you know, how you say, going, getting in your car and driving it, you know, filling it up with petrol, all these different things. It includes all that. So that's the thing, is that bhakti, everything else that you're doing in your life is already included within that. And if it's not, then why are we doing it? So you have to see some way it connects. Like, you know, you need to go out, let's say, and do some exercise, you know, go run around the block or do some yoga or go to the gym. But then it should have some way that it's supporting your doing Krishna consciousness. Right? So like we see in, in Shaolin, there was a Buddhist monk from India, I think from South. And so he came there and he was teaching, you know, the Buddhism, because they also know the Sanskrit and everything. So they actually know it better than anybody else. So Buddhism is famous in Eastern Asia and all that. But actually, stemming from India, it was the Indian Brahmins who, you know, knew the Sanskrit and knew the, you know, all the literatures, that they then technically knew the Buddhism very nicely. So he went there to teach. And but he noticed that because of, you know, the austere lifestyle and that, and they just sit around all day and stare at walls, that the monks weren't able to focus and not focus for very long. And you know, it was hard for them to do things. Oh, boy. Yeah, so because they were engaged. So then he, because of his background, I think he was a prince before, then he knew martial arts and all that. So then he started training them in martial arts so that they would physically be fit enough that they could sit there and meditate and do all the services that they needed to do in the ashram and this and that. Right? So nowadays, Shaolin is, you know, famous for being about martial arts, but actually it's a Buddhist monastery. It's about their Buddhist meditation and realization. So it's just that this is what they use to keep themselves fit enough. Like there's a monastery, I think, in Japan of Buddhists where they go out and there's a mountain there. I don't know the name of the mountain, but it's 60 kilometers circumference around the mountain. Every day they go out and run around that mountain. That's what they do. Right? So everybody does something. Right? And so they do that in those funny wooden shoes that the Japanese wear, those gaitas. They wear those all the way around. You know, that's their running shoes. You know, their Buddhist Air shoes, right? Yeah, because, you know, if you look underneath, they're about this high and there's so much air underneath. Yeah. That's the whole point, is that it's all connected. And so when you see it's all connected, then you work for it. You work to please Krishna. So all these things go along with it. So all we're doing is engagement in devotional service, and all these things are included. So that faith, that in that principle, that makes the difference between those who are fixed in that faith and those who are, just general like that. And then when that starts, because you have faith in that, whether that faith is constant, that's then the beginning stage. That's the neophyte. The madhyama means then that faith starts to become regular. Right? So they have to make the endeavor. That's all. That's important, is that what are they doing to engage themselves in Krishna's service? And so included in engaging themselves is giving up those things that are not valuable. And so by giving up what's not valuable and always being engaged in Krishna's service, then you're liberated. Right? But if they want to sit back and enjoy liberation, then, you know, that's not for us. That's the kaivalya. And so we're not interested in that. So that's why that doesn't come up. So it has to be, is that if they're expecting that, it'll be there, and without that endeavor, it'll happen. But they have to, so then the thing, okay, material desire. How do you get rid of material desire? You get rid of material desire by getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya And then when Lord Chaitanya is pleased, then getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And so by his grace, one gives up all material desire. But it's personal. You as a person want to give up material desire, then you have to surrender to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So that's why it's said that these two are so special. You know, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are like the sun and moon rising on the eastern horizon of Nadia, you know. Does that make sense? So by getting their mercy, then it happens. It's not that by sitting there and, you know, how you say, putting on one of those funny masks, you know, that they have in like in the DC universe or something like that, that that's going to keep you from overeating or something. No, you just, you know, it's about Krishna. So you're eating because it's connected to Krishna. And so I want to do service. So how much do I need to eat to serve Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? So in this way, you start to balance it. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. You had something, sir?
No, thank you, Maharaj. You actually answered my question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, very good. Okay. So then, so we're on page 28. After realization of Brahman by bhakti mixed with Brahmagyan, by the strength of purification of bhakti, he realized Bhagavan beyond Brahman from the attainment of prema. That is described in this verse. He attained spiritual identity, labdhatma, by the state of bhakti, bhakti bhavena, which was prema, parena, directed to the shelter of all beings, pratyag atmani, after the destruction of material ahankara by Brahmagyan. He attained ahankara of shuddha-sattva composed of bliss, the bliss of prema. Okay, so a doubt may come up. Shamshaya, should ahankara and mind return? Again, there will be causes of bondage. So that's the thing, is that they're taking the mind and the ego, then they give the problem, right? So they don't understand about the spiritual platform of variety. So they just think that the mind and the ego will give trouble. They don't understand about proper use. You know, it's just like let us say, you know, a very good example is, let's say, cars, okay? There might be some individuals, but you don't hear it on a mass scale that there's any movements, you know, where people are trying to create awareness in the general public about the terribleness of cars and the badness of cars, and cars kill, and, you know, and so therefore we should all give up cars and just, you know, walk or take, you know, horse carriage or a donkey or something, right? People just say, no, you have to drive properly. So even though, you know, 100,000 people a year will get killed in car accidents, you know, which is more than gets killed in a lot of other things, but no one's saying cars are evil and they should be given up, right? Because they see the usefulness of them, the practicalness of them. So therefore then they're seeing is that, yes, but they have to be used properly. So it's like that with anything, you know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in India in the 1800s, I think it was early 1800s, there was a group called, you know, it was a gang called the thuggies, like that. And so their specialty is they would take a handkerchief, right? Because, you know, everybody has a handkerchief you keep in your pocket, right? And in the corner, they would tie a coin like that. And they had a system where they could take that handkerchief and they could flip it like this and it would go around somebody's neck, and how it would press and the coin would be there. It would just press on their throat and they would strangle. But the uniqueness of it was is the person would make no sound. So they could come up behind somebody, flip that thing around like that, and just take them into the bush. No one would even, someone could be standing next to them talking. And these guys would come up, and the guy would just disappear. No one knows what happens. So the British, you know, it took them a long time to work everything out and that and go after them, because who are they? Because they'll just be look like everybody else, you know, because they're not out there with a, you know, guns or this or that. They're just out there with a handkerchief and some coin from their pocket. You know, so now are we going to go on this whole thing, ban handkerchiefs and ban coins? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it's proper use. So that's what they're doing here, is that they're not really well informed. So their whole point is that the mind and the ego are giving problem. And so they think you get rid of the problems, you get rid of them, you get rid of the problem, as opposed to, no, you use them properly in the positive way. So we're not used to this. We're used to using something positive because we get a benefit. And if we don't get a benefit, we reject it. But here it's a matter of we're getting problem from using it improperly. So that's, again, why bhakti includes everything else. Because if you're performing bhakti, it means you're doing it to please Krishna. Therefore, you have to do it properly. If it's about Krishna in the beginning, yes. If it's aropya, you're going to do it the way whatever you like to do it, and then give the result to Krishna. But with time, as you get purified, then it's a matter of doing it so it's favorable for Krishna. Right? So everything's favorable. The knowledge is favorable. The identity is favorable. The attitude's favorable. The endeavor, the particular result is favorable, all that's favorable. So naturally it just increases, rather than you just start with the results for Krishna, because that's why you work. People work because of a result. No result, no work, right? The Mayavadis don't work because there's no result they want. They don't want anything from the material world. So we're working to please Krishna, then you start to adjust everything else. Naturally, it will be there. As you advance, become purified, you advance in Krishna consciousness, you get purified, and in that purified state, you can start to see things more clearly, how they fit to Krishna or how they don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem here, is they don't see like that, you know? So they just see it that it's a problem. So because everything's illusion and all that, but if everything's illusion, why is it these two specifically you're working on? Why not something else? You know, why not the rhododendron out in your backyard or something? Why is it that, you know, the mind and the ego are the ones that you're going after? Because if it's all illusion, it's all illusion. You know, your big toe is illusion also. Are we trying to get rid of that? No. Utra, that is not the case. He is free of bondage, mukta bandaha, bandanaha, anavriti shabdata. There is no return from the Lord's abode because of scriptural statements. Brahma Sutra 4.4.22. Kardama saw the Paramatma situated within all living beings, and saw all living beings situated within Brahman and Bhagavan, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.24.46. Yeah, so he sees Paramatma in everyone and everyone in Bhagavan. Right? So that's why Krishna says, you know, he is in everything, everything's in me, like that. But at the same time, it says Bhagavan, then there's a difference of how they're there. They're part of, they're, as his parts and parcels, and all that, the part of him. But then it's the when the mentality is right, that's then when you say it's Bhagavan. Because otherwise, yeah, it's Paramatma that's going back and forth. He's in them, they're in him. But with Bhagavan, it's when they take up that shelter. His attainment of spiritual identity by pure bhakti is explained. So, yes. So in other words, the more pure the bhakti, the better the standard of the liberation. So that's all. There's gradation, because otherwise, how is it the devotees are following the four regulative principles, right? How many karmis are following the four regulative principles, right? Basically, you know, nobody. There might be a few here or there, but, you know, by determination or by accident, So there are, so that means they're already that much acting on that liberated platform. And it's just a matter of time before it becomes more and more stable. But if the thinking, it'll just be this platform, I'll be on and I'll be happy, nothing will bother me, then is it about Krishna or is it about themselves? So that's the thing. We're interested in Brahma Bhuta, not Mukti. His attainment of spiritual identity by pure bhakti is explained. Atmanam means Paramatma. This person sees Bhagavan everywhere. Icha, Dvesha, Vihi, Neena, Sarvatra, Sama, Chetasa, Bhagavat, Bhakti, Yuktena, Prapta, Bhagavati, Gatihi. Free from desire and hatred towards everything in the material world. With mind, seeing everything is equal. By pure bhakti for the Lord, Kardama attained the position of an associate of the Lord in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:24-47. So because you see everything connected, because Krishna is entering everything as Paramatma, but all these living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. So you're going to then see this proper balance. That was Bhagavatam 3:24-47. His direct meeting with the Lord is described. In his condition, he attained the Lord, Bhagavati Gatihi. He saw everything equally everywhere because he was devoid of desire and hatred anywhere. That means it's not that you don't hate this or hate that, but you hate something else. So it's not a matter of the quality of that. That's piety. And piety then, you're trying to give up, you know, things that get in the way of your proper dealings and relationships. But ultimately, there has to be given up hatred for anything like that. He saw everything equally everywhere because he was devoid of desire and hatred anywhere, since they are despicable, it is said. Narayana para sarve na kutas chana bhibhyati. Svarga Pavarga Narakeshvapi Tulyarta Darshinaha. Devotees solely engaged in the service of Narayana never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation and hellish planets are all the same. Because it's just, they're the same because whatever your situation you're in, you're serving Krishna. That's the whole point. We're taking it, oh, no, but this is better, that's worse, and this and that because of the situation of us, our experience. But if you're looking at it, my service to Krishna, then it doesn't have that. You don't have that element. Right? Because then it's all the same. It doesn't matter. It's just like if you're in the temple, then everything you do, you serve Krishna, right? So it's not that there's anything that's not serving Krishna. So whether you're serving in the temple room, doing some cleaning or studying, going to a class or cleaning or offering prayers or japa, or you're in the deity room or you're in the deity kitchen or, you know, wherever you are, you're just doing service. So it doesn't matter. So if they're in Brahman, they're on the liberated platform, they're absorbed in Krishna. They're in the heavenly planets, they're absorbed in Krishna. They're in the hellish planets, they're absorbed in Krishna. Like Narad Muni, where he can travel anywhere. So sometimes he's here, you know, like with Maharaj Yudhishthira, that sometimes in the lower planets, then you see Prahlad Maharaj, then on the higher upper planets, he's with Indra and that, he's in Brahmaloka, he goes to Vaikuntha. Wherever he goes, he just sings and plays his veena. So it doesn't matter for him. They're just situations. Right? Because it's not about our enjoyment. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say we go and out back, you know, where all the garbage is kept and all that, then, you know, now and again, it has to be really given a nice clean and stuff like that. So then going back there and cleaning that, you know, it's at the temple, so it's, you know, all the from the deities and the devotees. So therefore you go back there and clean in it, even though you can say it's a hellish condition because there's, you know, no sense gratification in that. But one is very happy doing that because it's some nice service for Krishna. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter what the situation is, you serve Krishna. Right? So what's favorable for serving Krishna, that's what you're looking for, not what's just comfortable. Does that make sense? Yes, no, okay. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Parvati might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Narayana Para, simply dependent on Narayana. They do not mind reverses in life because in the service of Narayana, they have learned to tolerate whatever hardships there may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.167. They are literally engaged in the service of the Lord and therefore they are excellent. By using the word Britya Brityanam, Lord Shiva pointed out that although Chittaketu provided one example of tolerance and excellence, all the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord as external servants are glorious. They have no eagerness to be happy by being placed in the heavenly planets, becoming liberated, or by becoming one with Brahman, the supreme effulgence. These benefits do not appeal to their mind. They are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-28 purport. Or according to the Sahasranama commentary, Sama means he who stays with, Sa, Lakshmi, Ma. Thus, Sama Chaitasa means by consciousness on the Lord. Another version has Prapto Bhagavatim Gatim. Kardama, I guess, attained the spiritual goal. Bhagavat Bhakti Yuktena is modified by the phrases Icha Dvesha Vihi Nena and Sarvatra Sama Chaitasa. Thus, the meaning is he attained the spiritual goal by bhakti, which concentrated on the Lord and was free of desire and hate. Right? So you see, is that then because desire and hate means karma and jnana. It is said in Gita. That person, so he sees that Bhagavatam is pointing out the examples, not of just who gets liberated, but who comes to the platform of pure devotional service. That person who is endowed with sattvika intelligence, with mind controlled by sattvika determination, who has given up all the sense objects such as sound, who has eliminated attachment and repulsion, resorts to solitude, eats little and controls speech, body and mind, who is completely absorbed in contemplating the Lord, who has taken shelter of detachment, who is free from false ego, who is devoid of impressions which increase the false ego, who is devoid of pride, lust, anger, and possessiveness. That person, free from worldly connections, realizes Atma and is situated in peace. Srimad Bhagavad Gita 18:51-53. So it's interesting, here is all these points. You say that and it's all, it makes sense. But all these things have been described in all these chapters, 13 through 17. You know, it's telling about the modes of nature and how everything goes and what's proper action and not. And so then we can see the essence of all those things are this verse here where it shows how all those are connected to the Lord. Having attained realization of Atma, being a pure soul, he does not lament for or desire anything except me and looks upon all other beings as equally inferior. He attains bhakti in the form of realizing me. Only by devotion does a person know me as I am. Having known me in truth, he then meets me. Bhagavad Gita 18:54-55.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Yes. So we see in the description of Kavamamuni,
it seems that he is realizing Bhagavan, but by step, Raman, Ramatma, and
yes.
So,
yes.
But it is this work seems very, very difficult meditation, like he has done, he has lived, you know. So can we say that when a person is at the Bhagavan level, Brahman and Paramatma are already included?
Yes. So that means if you are focusing on Bhagavan, serving Bhagavan, then you're going to go through these steps. It means you're going to always appreciate Bhagavan, but you're going to see your situation is going to go from where, you know, you start to see everything connected to the Lord, then how Krishna's controlling everything and everything like this, until it comes up to just the appreciation of Krishna himself. So that's the point. Bhakti already includes the processes of karma and jnana. So therefore, any benefits that you would get from the path of liberation or the meditation on the Paramatma are already included in bhakti. You know, so whatever's there. And because mentioned here, he's Sama, he is the one who stays with Lakshmi. Therefore, then facility also comes along with that. You know, it's just like, think about it. You know, for many, sitting in Mayapur, right? And in Mayapur, we have these things, like these, you know, electronic equipments,
and
the internet and all these different things that we can have this class.
Yes.
Right? You know? I mean, computers were around 10 years ago, but did everybody have them? No. You know, especially in India. It means if you were in Mayapur 10 years ago, did you have a computer? You had, okay, 15 years ago? No.
But I didn't have it 15 years ago. That was the biggest problem.
Yeah, so these things, but in the West, it comes here. So here you get everything here. You know, it's just like, you know, maybe it's on the other side for you, but, you know, there's a bakery, you know, down next to, Jagadish Prabhu and that in the morning you can get a croissant, you know, like that. You know, you can't even get that in Calcutta. You're getting it in Mayapur. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that these things just come along, but it's not about that. It's about serving Krishna. So you focus on Krishna, and Krishna takes care of everything else. If there's need to be something like that, then you have. You know, so the arrangements are there. So like that, you know, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is like, or let's say, you know, at Govindas, on the roof, they have a wood pizza oven, right? Now, go around temple to temple, all our temples all around the movement. Who has a wood pizza oven? And not only that, we have quite a few in Mayapur, right? You know, so the whole point is what temple has that? Even in Italy, they won't have that. Somebody might personal have one, but who has that? You know, so just these things, they just Krishna arranges because you're doing something else. But if it gets out of hand, then Krishna takes it away. Does that make sense? You know, so, and these things have been there for a long time. So it's just, what is there, you know, it's you know, very amazing just what Krishna takes up, because he's Sama, he's with Lakshmi. So these things have come on the side. So therefore, everything from karma, everything from jnana, everything from yoga is already included in bhakti. So by performing bhakti, these things come as a side thing, because you're focusing on Bhagavan, then the realization of Brahman and Paramatma come along with it. So that's the whole point of this Bhagavat Sandarbha, is that by worship focusing on Bhagavan, you already get all the understandings and benefits of Brahman realization. You already get liberated, and you already see everything connected to the Lord and see everything equally. That's because that's how it is in the spiritual world. They're all situated in prema for Bhagavan, but they're all on the liberated platform in that they see everything connected to the Lord, and they see all living entities and everything equally. But it comes as a side thing. They don't have to separately work. Of course, we hear about it and all that so that we're aware of these things. And, you know, we make an endeavor, but we always make an endeavor in context of bhakti. That's where the point comes up, oh, someone's fanatic. But that's only because they're seeing it on its own, not connected necessarily with bhakti, or overemphasizing it, not seeing other things connected with bhakti. But if it's connected with bhakti, it's so perfectly balanced. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, how he's presenting, is so perfectly balanced that we just think it's just something so easy and regular. When in fact, it's not. What Prabhupada's giving in those conclusions, no one else is giving that. Literally no one else. No other sampradaya, nobody. Even you won't even fully understand these things directly from the acharyas. It's from through the founder acharya. That's how you know. And so how is that? Where did the founder acharya come from? That Lord Krishna sends. Does that make sense? You know, so all the founder acharyas, Lord Chaitanya sent them. And then to culminate all of that, then you have Srila Prabhupada. So very special. It's all included, all inclusive. You know, like when you're having a contract and you want to know, it's all inclusive. Yeah. So best quality contract. Is that okay? Okay. You had something?
No.
I was just thinking that it's the story of Kardama Muni is a good answer to those who ask whether we're going to change the bhava or what's going to happen to the bhava. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments is that he left although Kapila was born and he could, like he had that option to develop Vatsalya bhava, but because it was in conflict with his Dasya, which was already Sai bhava, then he just left. He knew his meditation.
Yeah, interesting. That's a very interesting point. Yeah, nice. Yeah, very good.
May I ask?
Yes.
Guru Maharaj, you have explained that Krishna arranged everything good for his devotees, but on the stage of Taranga Rangini, we devotee have some tendency to think that it's because we are so nice and so on. So how to overcome this tendency and always remember that everything good was arranged by Krishna and comes from him?
Yes, means we, the point, it's the same, the principle is the same, is by focusing on Krishna, then one doesn't get distracted by the secondary aspects, because you see is that the primary is pleasing Krishna. Then there's activities that produce, you know, then there's activities that you do to please Krishna, and those produce facilities, and that comes from the environment, right? In other words, I do an activity that's where? In the environment. What transforms? The environment. And then that transformation, that's what's offered to Krishna. So the external consciousness means that it's about the transformation, what is transforming and the transformation that becomes more prominent for us. And then when we think we're the doers, then naturally we can get distracted. But if we think that all these things are for pleasing Krishna, then we won't get distracted. Does that make sense? Because the Taranga Rangini, that's the point is it's an anarta. And that anartha still means that, you know, I'm the one that's doing these things. I'm the controller. I'm the enjoyer. You know, it may be more subtle and all that, but it's still something is there. So we always have to be careful until we come to platform of pure devotion, then we do. So when we see that's crossed, then we get a taste, right? Because generally, if they're doing that, that means they're regular in devotional service. So you see there's an overlap. That yes, anartha nivritti is here, and when that's complete, then you come to the stable stage, you know. But Prabhupada's mentioning about 75%, so that means 25% still there. So that means that full form of anartha nivritti is when one comes to Brahma Bhuta. That's the actual full form. But otherwise, we see anishta, then it's predominantly 75%. That's pretty good. You know, and so then you'll see it, but it's also said when you get taste, ruchi, then you give up all other desires and interests. So you can see is that, well, that'll start to go at that point. You know, then it's a matter of, okay, you've given those up, but then there has to be an attachment for Krishna. And that attachment, when that intensifies, that will take you into bhava. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. So you just have to focus on devotional service and trying to do everything to please Krishna, right? So just pure devotional service. That's the solution to every problem is the understanding and endeavor for pleasing Krishna through pure devotional service. Okay. Okay. Having attained realization of Atma, being a pure soul, he does not lament for or desire anything except me, and looks upon all other beings as equally inferior. He attains, right, they're equally inferior. It means everybody's not the Lord. But it's not that he sees one living entity is superior to another. No, all living entities are all servants of the Lord, but you're going to interact with them according to the particular the body that they have. So you see, some don't worry about that, you know, but then, you know, they're on that Uttama platform. So then they just see everybody like that. That's why then these sages, you know, they can move through the forest and all that with all the tigers. And that, and then they all just respond because you're dealing with them as soul, they respond as soul.
Right.
Yes.
Technical question. All that in bold font, this is Jiva Goswami's direct quotes? He's quoting Gita?
The bold font. Go ahead.
The one which is in bold is the direct anuchedas of Jiva Goswami. And then anything we put is in udhriti, it is not in bold. And even Jiva Goswami's Sarvada Samvadani commentary will not be in bold. But everything which is in bold means it's like what Jiva Goswami has said in the anucheda.
So it's directly the Sandarbha.
Yes.
And then you'll see sometimes he gives, not so often, but he gives his own commentary on the Sandarbha, and then it will be mentioned like that. There we just had one some time back, no? Where you see Jiva Goswami.
We put the heading Sarva Samvadani Maharaj, and then.
Yeah, so, you know, just like we do in the Gita, we'll have the bold like that, and then they'll have, you know, Krishna Prabhupada says in the purport, Jiva Goswami says this, that one says that. So that's all there, but you see the udriti, where we just had the on the page, bottom of the page before, and it's the top of 29. That's it's not in bold. I think it's even a smaller font, like that. So it's indented. So at the top of the page, it says Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 1. Anything in line with that is what he said. And then all the shlokas that he quotes, they're also in bold like that, but they're centered. So the Uttara, the Shamshaya, that's all him on the previous page. This is just, he's made the point, and then he says someone might have a doubt, right? Because he's given his point, right? Because in the Adhikarana, then you're going to make your point. So his point, you know, in this Adhikarana, then is the superiority of Bhagawan is indicated by the fact that Brahman is a step towards bhakti. Then he gives his reasons for that, you know, and having given all those reasons and explained, then there may be a doubt, right? So he's made his thesis, he's gave his reasons, the hetu, and then you have what's the middle one?
Udaharana and Upanayana, Maharaj, if you go like that.
Udaharana, okay.
Vishaya Samshaya and Purva Paksha.
No, don't, wait. Okay. Calm down. Udaharana, yeah. Right? So in the third section, Udaharana, that's the section that now you're going to clear doubts. So either on your own, you're bringing up examples and things like this, and you're clearing it, or someone may have an actual doubt, and so then they ask at that point. And so then you're going to explain that, you're going to give reasons, you're going to do all those things like that. So here, there might be, if it's a conversation, then there might be someone doubting. And if not, then you may bring it up. Like sometimes Prabhupada and Purport say, some may say, you know. So he may not even indicate what school of thought that is or anything. He'll just say, some may say, and he brings it up. So same here. So now in that Udaharana, when you're bringing up these points, if you're just on your own, you just call it Udaharana. But if you're dealing with the doubt, then your points that you're going to make like this and all that, that's going to be called Shamshaya, Vishaya, you know, Shamshaya, the Uttara, all these different things. So in other words, you're going to go back and forth in there that you said what you say now. Okay, their doubt, Shamshaya. So then your Uttara, what's the Vishaya?
Vishaya is the thesis point,
Mark. Yes, so it goes back to there. So in other words, you'll have Shamshaya, then their Uttara will be specifically for their question. Having answered the question, now I want to say something more to make things clear. That'll be the Vishaya. Then from that Vishaya, there might be another Shamshaya, another doubt. And so I'll give another Uttara. And then I'll either then go into another Vishaya until it can, or I might go into the Siddhanta. I may just give the conclusion of that and show, and go to the next stage, the fourth stage, where I bring it all together and make the conclusion like that, and then end. Does that make sense? So it's one system. Unfortunately, because it has different names to it, and we're from the world of names, then we consider that therefore it's something completely different. Like if I say car or automobile, they're two different things. Like, you know, I drive a car, my father might drive an automobile, but I'd never drive an automobile, right? I only drive car, right? Does that make sense? You know, so like that, we have this thing and we're attached to the words and the names and everything like that. But the point is that this Shamshaya, the Uttara, Vishaya, Shamshaya, Uttara, and Siddhanta, they're just showing how the discussion goes, but they still fit in these five categories. There's no question of it not fitting in the five categories. So in the first two, and then they may have, you know, their Shamshaya, then that is their thing. And they might even give an explanation, right? But we'll just call it Shamshaya. But he's saying he has his point is, you know, the mind and the ego are cause of bondage. So if they return on the spiritual platform, you'll be bound again. And so he might give some reasons, like you see in some of the bigger ones, they give their reasons and their points and examples. So they apply the whole five in their thing. But you just call that Shamshaya, right? Then you give your point that that's called Uttara. And then if you want to make a further point, you're not finished to conclude it yet, you want to make some further points, that's called Vishaya. So that's what's going on. But it's always according to these five. So even if you just use the terms of Vishaya, Shamshaya, Uttara, and Siddhanta, you still know the same things are going on. Even if it just starts of Vishaya, that means it's going to have the statement, you know, the Pratigya and the Hetu and all those things like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
If the opponent gives more reasoning, then we put Purva Paksha as well.
Okay. Then you have Purva Paksha also.
If they just say in one sentence, generally it's like a doubt, and that's what I like to confirm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it just means it's bigger. But it's just you give it because he's, in other words, he just says a question, but if he has a whole statement, then you'll say, what do you call it?
Purva Paksha. Yes.
Yeah. So that'll be his whole thing that he's doing, his Megillah, right?
Yes, Mark.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? What's going on the pages here? Yeah. Okay.
All right. On that. And can you explain the difference between Shamshaya and Purva Paksha? One is the doubt, and the other one is?
Purva Paksha means it's his doubt with all his explanations and his examples. In other words, he is going through the Adhikarna. He's putting up his thesis, his reasoning, and then he's trying to clear your presentation as you know, a doubt for his position. So then you would say Purva Paksha. You know, you made your full presentation, the first three. Now he makes his presentation of the first three. Right? Now then you have an Uttara for that, and then it goes. So he may have a whole thing, but generally after that, it'll just go back and forth, Shamshaya and Uttara. And then you want to make a further statement, so that's Vishaya. So you're giving, likely see, let's say in these really big purports, like let's say for Bhagavatam 111, so then Prabhupada will explain something, a point nicely. Then he'll end that, go to another paragraph and start another one. Another angle. So this would be what you say is the Vishaya aspect. You know, he's giving another angle on it. But it's still in context of the Pratigya, of the actual main point. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just a matter of how much is there, but because we want it to fit into just this nice five things and that's it. But the point is that if you're having a discussion, the other guy, he's going to try using the five things also, because that's just what you use. And so if he's using more of it, then it'll be Purva Paksha. If he just has a doubt, then you just say Shamshaya. You know, so then it's easy because he just asks his point. He could explain a whole Megillah there, but he doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Somebody's saying something? No? Okay.
It's just background.
Just background. Okay. Yes. He attains bhakti in the form of realizing me, right? So when he comes to that, he sees everything connected to Krishna, all living entities equally, all connected to Krishna. Then he comes to realizing me. And only by a devotion does the person know me as I am. So when you come to those things, then you're seeing the Brahman platform and the Paramatma platform, then you know Krishna as I am, means as a person. Having known me in truth, he then meets me, right? So then having come to that point where he comes to appreciate Krishna in those features, even though it's all about Bhagavan, but those features of Krishna, then he comes to know Krishna as the person. And knowing Krishna as the person, when he knows him, you know, properly in truth, then he meets Krishna. Right? Because it has to be fully absorbed in Krishna and complete, like the Purva Rag means that it's completely about Krishna. It's exclusive. There's nothing else. Right? There's no distraction of anything else. So that whole point comes up is that he is just seeing that in that way. He knows everything about Krishna. Good, just because you know, but then it has to be, then it's absorbed in Krishna. So then he meets Krishna. So it's a natural that all this is consistent. It all fits into how we've understood the whole process. So that Shraddha, the Prema process remains the same. These are just giving some particular finer details. They may be discussing it in the context of Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. So that Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdite. So in that context, then, you know, how the wording and everything, but the progression is exactly the same. Because being liberated, then you're on the Brahma Bhuta platform. So let's say you have, you know, just this is an example. A neophyte devotee remembers Krishna at the time of death. So they go back to Godhead, right? So they'll go to wherever Krishna is performing his pastimes in the Bhauma Lila. And, you know, because here in this universe, it's going to be every 8,400,000,000 years that Krishna is personally going to come and perform his Braj pastimes, right? Like that, a Swayam Bhagavan means every Dwapar Yuga, Krishna is going to come and perform his pastimes, right? So it's only once in a day of Brahma that as Swayam Bhagavan he comes, like that. So therefore, if we're interested, we're following the movement of Lord Chaitanya like now, therefore then you want to go to that universe where Krishna's pastimes are happening. And so then you'll be whichever universe it's in, you'll go there, right? And now when you get there, now you're on the Brahma Bhuta platform, right? You're fully liberated. You're in your spiritual body. You're in the spiritual world. There is no material connection. But as a neophyte, you don't really have the love for Krishna. Then there's an attraction that's been gained by the association of the devotees, by the instructions of the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, the acharyas. So that's there. But then, you know, so the first thing is appreciating the Dham and appreciating the transcendental environment, you know, that you're in. Then you'll start to appreciate the devotees that are there. So that means now you're starting to see all the devotees of value, right? So that's the point. You're seeing, you know, all things connected to him. You're seeing all living entities equally, right? Then you're going to, by that association of those great devotees, then you're going to start and get that attraction for Krishna, where then you want to just exclusively serve Krishna. That then brings you to the point of knowing him in truth, right? So that brings you to samadhi, right? And then from that, then you go into apandas, you meet Krishna. So it's no different. So these are just the technical things in the context of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, but it's the same process. While in the, you know, the literatures on devotional process and all that, then they may put more, you know, the technical emphasis and all that. So we'll use our terminology, but this is generic terminology. This works for anywhere in the spiritual world. And the terms we use are specifically for Vrindavan, but they're the same. Does that make sense? Yes, no, very good. Okay. Vishate means he meets me. One says, giving up Duryodhana, the king met Pravish Tavan, literally means entered, Yudhishthira. This is explained in Sridhar Swami's commentary on the 10th canto when the cowherds see Vaikuntha after entering the wealth of Brahman. Maitreya spoke thus. Yeah, so from that platform, then you can see. So the devotees, they see you hear the class, you're doing kirtan, you start to appreciate that platform, you're situated like that. Then afterwards, so the point is because of our conditioning, this is another aspect of that previous question. Because of our conditioning, we don't take advantage of the point that we're liberated. So because we're conditioned, we identify with our conditioning. And so even though we're liberated, we still act as though we're conditioned. because the soul by nature is liberated. Then by consciousness, they become conditioned. So then they're situated in the material world. But now taking up devotional service, again, you're on the liberated platform. But if we, you know, how much we're holding on to or how much we're engaged in the conditioned consciousness, then we're going to act within that. So even though we're liberated, we'll still act within that. Just like the living entity can be in the spiritual platform. But because, of, you know, as we were saying, the neophyte goes back to Godhead. And he's there in the spiritual world. He has a spiritual body. But he may or may not be so focused on Krishna as he can. So like it says in that opening to the introduction of the Rasa dance, that the gopis, some of the gopis, you know, they're engaged in all the things and cooking for the family, taking care of the children and doing all these things. And they're very absorbed in that. So then they're not as absorbed in Krishna enough. They're not in samadhi, where now they know him in truth, so then they meet Krishna. So when Krishna plays his flute, they haven't come to this realization. So they're stopped by their families. They can't go. But in being stopped and locked in their rooms, then they, and that's the advantage. They, you know, then the thing is they get upset and lock them in the room so they can't go anywhere, but at least they're alone. They're not with these materialists. So then they can now just meditate on Krishna. And in that meditation, then they come to know Krishna in truth and all that. Then they become qualified to now meet him in person. So the whole point is even you have the spiritual body and the spiritual, you can still not see it connected to Krishna. You know, it may be neutral, but the point is neutral means no real relationship, at least no dynamic relationship, right? Something comes up about Krishna, of course they're absorbed, but they can also be distracted. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.